You're listening to Beyond the Jargon, a jargon-free look at graduate students and their research here at the University of Victoria. I'm Colleen, and I'll be your host today.
All right, I'm so excited today to have as my guest Carlos Sosa, who is in a doctoral program in the UVic's Mechanical Engineering School. Right? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, welcome. Yes. And so, Carlos, could you fill our listeners in on exactly what your PhD program is in? And then we're going to kind of backtrack and find out, how'd you get here?
Yes. Hello, everybody. I'm Carlos. So right now I'm starting my PhD. I'm doing mechanical engineering. The subject is composite materials.
Composite?
Composite materials.
Okay, what is that?
Well, those are non-conventional materials that are lightweight, that are very good resistant, have good mechanical properties like strength, stress, and fatigue.
So, okay.
Normally they are used now in aerospace industry.
Okay.
They are also difficult to manufacture compared to metals. So there's a lot of research now going on
okay.
composite materials.
So these are what someone would say is a manufactured material,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Completely manufactured. You're not going to go out and just find this.
You can think of it as a compound material made up of different materials. So you have a matrix made of, for example, epoxy or a resin, and then you can get fibers into it. The fibers are like embedded in that matrix.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
So the fibers provide the strength of the material.
Okay.
The matrix like warps it all up.
All right. And which is incredibly important in aerospace, right? I loved space travel. I loved the idea of it in the movies. I loved astronomy in school. And of course, I always followed all the liftoffs and whatever. And when you see one go awry, I remember when I was in college, the space shuttle exploded, right?
Yes,
and everything,
yes.
And everything comes down to one little tiny material not being able to withstand something can
yes.
be the difference. It's not the same as being here, you know, just on the ground,
right?
It
that's
becomes
right.
very
that's
crucial.
Right.
And that's what you study.
Yeah, that's right. In space engineering and in aerospace as a general engineering, it's very crucial to be able to simulate all the materials and to simulate all the flight conditions. It's very important for us to understand how the structures behave, to loads, to thermal loads, to the environment, so that we can prevent those accidents.
Yes, and a load means how much something can handle, right?
Yes,
that's
yes.
what that means.
Exactly.
Okay, so all right, so this is really technical, right?
A bit.
Now, how did you get into this? Was this something like, when you were a kid, you're just like, oh my gosh, I totally have to work in the space program. I mean, I had that idea too until I went into a simulator and realized I couldn't handle small spaces. And then I'm like, now I'm in theater and drama for the young. So go figure.
Yes.
Maybe I'll write a play about space, but space travel. But
yes, I was since kid, I was very keen on mechanics. I always liked mechanisms. And I remember spending a whole day building Lego stuff.
Oh, nice. I love Legos.
You know, so, yeah, I always liked those engineering MacGyver widgets.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, yes.
So by the time I had to decide which subject to follow at university level, I picked mechanical engineering at first. But then there was like a new, brand new course in aerospace engineering, which was a little bit like mechanics and a little bit like electronics. So we may choose the branch of that course. So I ended up choosing mechanical engineering as a branch of aerospace.
Okay, now did this idea to do mechanical engineering start at the beginning of your undergraduate career, or did it occur as you went through undergraduate and you had exposure to different types of courses, and then at the end you said, I'm going to get a master's in mechanical engineering? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, sort of. So when I went to university, I had no clear idea what to follow. So
okay.
I liked aerospace just for the name of it, just
yes.
for the sake of it, because I like space, I like aeroplanes, I like, you know, all the widgets that
yes.
I told you about. But I had no concise and clear idea of exactly what to study. So that was my first 2 years were very theoretical. And then after those 2 years, I had to choose like the branch I had to I was like to follow.
And this was in your undergraduate?
And that was in my undergraduate. Okay. At the end of the undergraduate.
May I ask where you went to school?
It was in Portugal.
Portugal?
Yeah. So I come from Technical University of Lisbon.
Instituto
Superior Técnico, we call it.
Oh, excellent.
Sorry if I talk too fast. It's a Technical Institute of Technology. We can call it like that.
Brilliant. Love it.
So, yeah. So after those 2 years, then I decided to choose the mechanical engineering branch.
Right? Excellent.
And then it followed 3 more years to finish my master's there in Portugal.
Okay, so you went straight through.
Yes, straight through.
Did you go to college right after high school?
Yes.
And did you go straight from your master's to the PhD?
Not exactly.
Oh,
not exactly.
Okay. Through your master's, you had gone straight school.
Yes, school. But after the master's, I strayed a bit. So I...
took a little break.
A little break, yes. I made a break before I ended my thesis, my master's thesis. So I did a volunteer service for 6 months.
Oh, excellent.
So I was helping old people with needs, with special needs.
Okay.
I was going to their homes to help them. I also worked in a daycare center where the old people gathered to play cards, to chat, to be involved in activities.
And what were you doing for them? Were you actually the activity organizer?
Not actually the activity organizer, because it was in Greece and it was very hard for me to speak any Greek. So I had the lessons there. I had some lessons, but even with lessons, 6 months is very few time, as you can imagine, right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
I participated in the activities.
I
didn't organize them. We had like two different tasks, as I can say. So one of the tasks was to go by car to the old people's houses, because some old people, some elderly, cannot move, or they have an illness or disease.
Right.
Some of them were in the bed all day, very bad. Some of them just wanted some company.
Yeah,
so we just
wonderful.
Go there, cook some food for them. We would pick up some medicine for them.
What a great experience.
Yeah, sometimes they ask me to go to the bank to pay some bills, you know, those kind of stuff.
So it's completely different from school, which you have been in, and intense school because it was engineering. So now you've had this break where you're out doing something of direct service to the elderly.
Yes.
And what brought you back to school?
Yes, then after those 6 months, my volunteer service ended. So I came back to Portugal, and so it was time to have a job, right?
Okay.
So I searched for a job. I applied for a job there. I got a position in, I can say, good company, very good company in Portugal, in the aerospace field, because, they were doing some components for the new KC-390 military aircraft for Embraer.
Okay.
So I accepted the offer, and I was there 6 months. After those 6 months, then it was a big turn up, because I started to be a bit unhappy in what I was doing. At that time, I lived with my girlfriend, and she also was not totally happy in her work. She came from pharmacy, so she was like every day in the pharmacy doing things that she actually didn't like, and so we were like we were feeling like limited in what we were doing, you know. So we stopped for a while to think about what we wanted to do, and so we make this huge decision to quit our jobs and to back to academia,
which is scary, but yet
a bit
know, anytime you transition, I love it when people really listen to their intuition and saying, this comfortable place I've been in is no longer comfortable, and I need to move out into the unknown, even though it's scary, to be able to go where my heart and soul knows it needs to go to learn, or whatever it is. There's a yearning there, something.
Oh, yes.
And so, okay, so you've done this now, so you've had this full year off of school, and now you've made the decision to go back into school, and what happened?
So then what happened? I applied for a PhD in Portugal.
Okay.
And my girlfriend applied for a second master's in Portugal too. So we were both studying, and our universities were very close to each other, so we managed to be together all day. So that was very nice.
Nice. Excellent.
Yes. So it was like 1 year of PhD in Portugal. And then my professors, one of my professors, invited me to come to Canada here to this university.
To the University of Victoria.
A beautiful place and a beautiful university.
Yes.
And so I applied. I applied here for a PhD too. And yeah, that's my story. And then now I'm starting now my PhD.
You're starting. So yes. Did your professor at your university in Lisbon work with the professors here in the University of Victoria? Because I too had a connection from the school I went to. They had known some of the professors here, and that's where the recommendation came from my master's to get to here, because it's far away from where I'm from, and it's even further from where you're from. So it was more than just, oh, they'd heard about a program. How did that work?
No, because I had two professors as a supervisor, as I can say, or a co-supervisor, if I can say.
Yes.
One of them was in Portugal, and the other one is a professor here in this university.
And that
so
occurred...
he was aware of my work, so I published papers, and so he was aware of every paper I published and my research. He was working in parallel with me and my Portuguese professor.
While you were in Portugal? So the two universities were already working together for
yes,
you?
Yes, they are partners, actually. They now are making a conference together.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
They are
the
chairs
not heard
of the conference. So it's a long-time relationship. Yeah, it's very good. Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes, I really appreciate this cooperation between universities. They break this huge distance between them, and they bond together in research and exchanging and transfer knowledge, which is very important, because
yes.
you can get very specialized people in one university and another very specialized people in another subject in another university. And when they are together, they can make much more, you know?
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly. Oh, brilliant. Okay, so now, how long have you been in Victoria?
So I arrived in the 21st of May, which
of
now
this year?
Makes... Yeah, this year, so it makes 1 month, yeah.
Oh, wow. So you're here, like, brand new.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still seeing around, searching for the places to go. You
yes,
know?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. I came from a place of lots of farmland and whatever, so I wasn't on an island and I wasn't on the coast of an ocean. So this was very different for me. But I'm wondering, do you find it, you know, Portugal obviously has a lot of ocean coast.
Oh, yes.
And so for you, yes. is that maybe something really comfortable to be on this beautiful island and have the reminder of the ocean? I mean, to,
yes.
because it's hard being in a new place, right?
Yes, 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 you're right. Well, here in Canada, I was very well received.
Right.
I was very welcome here. So far, everyone helped me out. People here are very nice. So in that aspect, I am very good and
yes.
I'm very happy. So about the place itself, so far I'm loving it, because I like these landscapes and the nature,
yes.
the animals free in the wild.
Yes.
We don't have that in Portugal, this wildness that you have here. Also, I came from a city which is pretty metropolitan.
Mm-hmm.
It's full of life, that city. Here is more calm, more relaxed in Victoria, and I
yes.
like that way.
Yes.
Know? With age, you start to change too. So
yes.
if I was a teenager, maybe I was getting bored here because it's very calm.
Yes.
But now with age, you start to like different things and
yes.
look for different things. And now, I think I prefer something like this, peaceful and calm and people nice. So yeah, I'm very happy.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so now let's get back to your actual program. When you come in a science program, from what I have seen, the sciences have one great benefit of no matter where you come from, you seem to automatically get put on some sort of team to work with. Whereas in my program, there isn't really a team. You're kind of on your own in the PhD
mm-hmm,
program,
mm-hmm.
even though you'll have supervisor and committee and colleagues, but you're not necessarily automatically a part of a team. Are you a part of a team? And is it exactly what you want to study, or does it coordinate with your studies?
Yeah, yeah, I understand what you
okay.
what you ask. So a PhD normally is very individual work. That does not mean that necessarily you have to be alone and work alone.
Yes.
So now I make part of this composite research network. Although I'm doing independent research, I'm part of this network, so I can
okay.
talk with people that are specialists. I can access some information to do my research. So, the research is individual.
And so, what do you want? Where do you go now that you've had You've done the undergraduate, you've done the master's, you've just started a PhD program. What do you do? How does that work for mechanical engineering? What do you take required courses? Are you...
Yes, so there are courses that are compulsory. You have to take them. And you can then make extra courses. So now I applied for those courses that are compulsory and one that is extra, which is directed studies.
Okay.
After you do your coursework, you have to do the candidacy exam. The candidacy exam basically is an exam to see if you are apt, if you are able to proceed with a PhD. Right,
to go forward. Right.
And also you have to do your thesis proposal, which
yes.
is something that I'm thinking right now in this moment, which is a document that states your intentions, a document that makes it clear what are the milestones of your research, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, so that's basically the guidelines that you have to follow to do a PhD.
So do you have an idea right now what you want your thesis to be?
Yes, sure.
Oh,
sure.
You yes, have a specific yes. idea? Because I actually came in with a sort of idea, and then it actually ended up in the last minute. I switched.
That's what yes. I... It's normal, you know, because in research, sometimes you are following a path and then there's a problem. And
yes.
when you solve that problem, more problems come, right?
Right,
and
right.
and then you struggle because you thought you had the question for that
yes,
problem.
Yes.
But then you find out that the problem is more complex than that.
Yes.
And in that point, normally you have to choose to follow another path. And that's why sometimes people end up in a different way and end up doing something that was not planned, you know.
Which,
so that's
great.
Research is normal.
It's normal.
Research for me is more of an adventure, you know, because you are researching something new and you are going to the unknown,
right?
So that opens a lot of doors and things that you can research. So it's very hard to plan with exactteness, you know,
yes.
with precision, what you will study and what you will research.
Right, because it allows you to be open to, if you're
yes.
really going into the unknown,
you
can't put limits on what
exactly.
you're expecting to find. You
exactly.
really have to be open to the true exploration.
Yes. Although you have always to have a lighthouse. I'm
yes.
not saying that you come here, you know, you come here and you say, okay, let's go to, no. You always have to have a lighthouse.
That's a
that
great
guides
way
you,
to look at
right?
it. Yes.
You always have to have a guideline. Otherwise, you'll be lost.
Yes.
In the ocean, right?
Right.
But once you are in the ocean, you can find many continents, right?
Yes.
So that's what
that's
I...
That's a beautiful yeah, picture.
What I see. Yeah.
Okay,
I,
so where is your... What is your lighthouse right at this moment? What is your lighthouse goal you're kind of shooting for here?
Yeah, so without being very technical,
yeah.
My purpose in the thesis is to find out better morphing structures. So structures...
Morphing structures?
Yes.
And
is it? Morphing structures are structures that can adapt to different conditions. So, for example,
say structure, do you mean a building?
Any structure in general.
Okay.
Because I'm from aerospace engineering, normally my application goals are to airplanes. So I'm talking about wings, I'm talking about winglets.
Yes.
I'm talking about components of the fuselage, fairings, helicopter blades. So there's a huge repertoire of structures that may be eligible for morphing.
Are you looking for them to be more stable? Are you looking for them to be give you greater speed? I mean, what's your angle on
no,
this?
No, the goal is to make planes better. That means
better in
better
many
performance.
Ways.
Better performance. So more fuel efficient.
Yes.
Less CO2 emissions. Make the wings with less drag.
Yes.
Because drag is the main thing in planes, right?
Right. Exactly.
So that's the goal. That's the goal. Also, there are also another goals that are not so obvious, but that are really important. For example, in helicopter blades,
yes,
normally you get a lot of vibration. And morphing blades can also help to suppress vibration in helicopters. And vibration normally is the source of acoustic noise, is also the source of uncomfortability. You feel uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a passenger.
Helicopters kind of freak me out, actually.
Right. So that's the main goal.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And so, as I was saying, morphing structures can replace structures that are composed with two parts that are hinged together.
Yes.
So in a morphing component, you have just a surface that is smooth and continuous, and you don't have that hinge there. So you have to. So the challenge is to actuate that structure, you know, so that you can move the surface in a certain way and get a certain geometry.
Without right? a hinge, without separate
hinge,
parts.
Without separate parts.
Oh, right? That's brilliant. And how do you do that? I mean,
that's my research.
Where does one start with that? I mean, that's a big...
Well, there's plenty of literature on that. I'm lucky because there's plenty of research that was made and a lot of investigation made on that. There are already some patents of morphing structures. So I'm just looking in new ways of doing it, better ways of doing it. If you want.
Do you have anything specific? Is there a specific part of the plane exactly that you're working that you would work on, or do you always think in terms of the entire plane?
No, I think in a specific component, like as I said before, for example, a winglet of a plane that is a more simple structure to simulate.
Yes.
So the winglets, for the people that don't know, are those tips in the wings of an aircraft.
The very end?
And the very end of the, of the tip. And those tips normally are deflected upwards or downwards.
Yes.
And they sort of reduce the strength of the vortex that is formed in the tip of the wing.
And what does it allow you to do? Does it give you, it gives you maneuverability?
Actually, is not for maneuverability.
It isn't, okay.
Winglets is a way of reducing the dissipated energy from the vortex shedding that comes from the tip. So you get better performance, better fuel efficient, if you know what I mean.
Right? So it cuts through the wind better? I mean, is this what we're talking about?
You may think about it, yes.
Because you're really going to have to explain this in terms of someone who doesn't understand what vortex and all of that. I mean,
yeah, I understand. It's more technical now.
Yes,
so it's,
right.
Yeah. But I think for people, maybe it's more simple to understand the wing itself, the flaps.
Yes, yes.
So the flaps are for maneuverability, is to turn the aircraft.
Yes.
Also, the flaps have other purpose. But they increase the lift of the wing.
Yes. And you're saying so that you're doing something separate from the flaps. You're talking about
smooth, continuous surface for the wing without the hinges that are present nowadays.
Oh, okay.
It's not a new idea, you know, it's right. not a new idea.
Right.
The goal is to make it better, right? To see what is the state of the art in that. And propose new ideas in that field.
So when you come up with an idea, are you doing this by theory only? Are you actually physically designing a prototype? Or are you working on the full plane? Or are you doing some combination?
So now...
as a student, I mean.
Yeah. Now I'm working more in the theoretical field and simulation field.
Okay.
But is a very theoretical. What I'm studying now is the material itself. Not a structure so far. Structure will be later.
Later.
So it's possible to manufacture some simple plates and simulate them and see and compare the results. So yes, that is definitely something I would like to do in my thesis. But later it may be possible to manufacture a component. But
a component.
For something that is to be planned.
So as a student, even through the completion of the PhD, you are going to be more in theoretical and then design and possible component. But the actual working on a plane would be, is that something someone does after they have their PhD? I mean, how does that work? Or do you want to take all this knowledge and go into university and teach? I mean, how do you have the practical bent or do you like the theoretical side or a combination?
Yes. Well...
Because I find that very interesting, because to me, you would think, oh, this would be totally, totally practical, but there's a huge, there's so much theory.
Yeah, I'm working now more in the theoretical field, because to be able to simulate those structures, you have to have a good theoretical background.
Right.
Because you are talking in nonlinear material behavior, you are talking in very big deflections and the distortions of the material. So... because of that nonlinearity, there are several methods currently available, and some of the some, or I will say all of those methods have limitations, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, it's very important to have a very good theoretical background. And then when you go to the experimental field, then you have to sort of connect both, see? The experimental field, of course, is always dependent on the resources you have.
Yes.
So it's very hard to plan in advance what will exactly be your experiment.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that I'm working on now. But you ask me about what happens next. So
yeah.
If the idea works, what happens next?
Yeah. Then what do you do?
The industry, normally, the industry is interested in ideas that work. So if you can prove that it works and it's better, normally there's this exchange between university and industry.
Yes.
And that's what makes the world develop. And that's the magic that is behind the technology development. Right?
So as a PhD student, you've come up with something, let's say a particular design, before you present it to industry, now to throw in a little more of the business side of things, do you get a patent on it first?
Yeah.
Or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's possible. it's possible, yes.
Do universities possible. Put patents on their
sure.
things first?
Sure.
And then they just don't go and have an idea and say, hey, would you like this idea?
Yeah, that's normal in academia and in industry.
Yes.
Patents can born in industry or they can born in academia. There's a very well-known research group in Bristol working in morphing structures. And they did a really good work and really good research work on morphing trailing edges for wings. And they ended up with this patent that, of course, industry... was interested in that.
Exactly.
So that's a goal. But to do patents takes a long time.
Yeah.
To go from theory to practice to experiment and then to a patent requires also more people involved normally.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So ideally, because we're now getting to the end of our time here, and I find it so fascinating. What would your ideal be for airline travel in the future, in the near future? Do you see any change to how things are besides the minor efficiency change, or do you see a completely different vehicle? I mean, can I ask that? Am I going to science fiction?
Of course. No, it's not science fiction.
I'm so intrigued by this.
Yeah, I think the idea and the goal would be to airplanes and air companies to make traveling by air cheap and affordable for everyone. If you think of the name of Airbus, it's a bus of the air, right?
Yes.
So it should be like a bus on the earth.
Yes.
Why not? Of course, that in the air, there are issues that you don't have in the earth. So the security is tighter in the air. But still, I think the goal is to make the planes efficient, affordable, so affordable that only the rich travel by car. So this is the goal.
Okay, excellent. That's awesome. Well, Carlos, this was so great. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Again, thank you for listening to Beyond the Jargon on CFUV.